You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
You're in Barcelona at the moment, and you were also there during the referendum. Can you tell us a bit about what that was like?
Basically, on the Sunday, I think the atmosphere was quite hopeful, but also slightly tense, because people were actually quite excited going out to vote, but there was this uncertainty if it was going to happen or not. So we woke up in the morning and went down to one of the polling stations, and it was closed. So like there were people inside, but they weren't letting people in to vote. And it's not quite clear why that wasn't happening, but we were outside for hours and it was packed. So I don't know, maybe hundreds, maybe even 1,000 people were waiting in different lines to get in, and by the time it opened, people went in, and it was very quick. People voted and came out, and we were all kind of anticipating some resistance by police, and it was in the morning that we kept getting videos from other places that the police was trying to prevent people from voting, that they were taking away ballots and papers. So even though I think for me, who walked around a lot, and we went to 7 different polling stations because we were wondering if there was anything we could do, none of the ones that we went to actually had any police presence. But all of them, people were kind of anticipating some kind of unrest, and they were just waiting and trying to make sure that as many people as possible could vote. So people actually stayed out at until 8 o'clock in the evening, and so did we, because we were just making sure that, okay, nothing happens. But pretty much in the afternoon, as far as I know, there weren't many transgressions by the police within Barcelona City. It all occurred mainly in the morning and in early afternoon. So yeah, so we got the videos, but I didn't necessarily see any. I just heard helicopters fly, and yeah, it was a sense of celebration and very family friendly, lots of older citizens, but yeah, but also this sense of, okay, there's going to be some kind of repercussion. If they haven't come now, they might come tonight, but in the end, they didn't show up, at least at the places where I was.
Do you mean that there was the sort of violence that occurred was in more focused areas?
I think it was in some areas that were somewhat strategic, even though we tried to look up on the map, because WikiLeaks posted, that's the map we use, posted a map of all the polling stations, and they were marked in green, and then you could see if one of them had been shut down and it was marked in red. So technology was quite helpful that day, so we were just looking where we could see red dots pop up to kind of see if there was a pattern to where they were going. And of course they went to bigger ones, and they also went, architecturally speaking, to places that they could access very quickly and that could be shut down more easily. So places where you maybe have a big intersection where the cars can arrive, and just places where they knew where lots of people would go to vote. So we were in Sants, which is historically a neighborhood that is extremely left-wing, very lots of self-organized associations. So we were anticipating that they would go there because it's such a hub of different associations, but they didn't. And some people argued maybe they didn't go there because they knew they could probably mobilize a lot more people to resist. I don't know, but they basically shut down in Barcelona only 14, I think that was the number. So that it was, the percentage was comparably low, so that actually a lot of people could still go to vote, and the ones who couldn't go to vote, they just went to another polling station. So even though the violence was massive and it looked like it was everywhere, it actually, they didn't succeed in shutting down a lot of the polling stations. I'm not trying to say there wasn't a lot of violence. What I'm trying to say is that they weren't actually as successful as it might come across.
Right.
And I think, yeah, it's also important to say that it was quite calm around it. So there was like these pockets of severe like aggression from the police. And then there was this surrounding of it, which was, yeah, very family-friendly. It's a lot of people out, like a lot of people with children, a lot of older people, which I think you can see in the images as well.
Yeah, do you think that that's, I guess, a specific... They sort of ignored that side of it on purpose in the media?
I think what's happening in the media right now is that there is, from... I would like to call it like manipulation, and some people argue it's just different perspectives, but I think some people try to say, hey, these are the bad people who want independence, and they're all really aggressive, and look, they're using their kids as human shields. And then on the other hand, there was, of course, this notion of highlighting the violence and showing how unacceptable it was. And now, of course, showing the repression by the state is an important part of the discourse of proving that the Spanish state doesn't want to negotiate. It is not open to political dialogue about independence. So I think that was that's a really important part to it. I think it serves a symbolic purpose, but it's also political evidence saying, look, this is what we're dealing with. So I think there was a political interest in highlighting that violence. Now, having said that, like, police brutality is not an exception in this country. So it's quite surprising how shocked everybody seemed to be in Europe or inside Spain that cops beat people, when it's actually quite frequent that cops beat people in this country. But they often beat people who, you know, who maybe are on the extreme left or were immigrants, were undocumented people.
Can I just go back to what you said regarding WikiLeaks? So how was the referendum planned?
So the referendum, even though the movement for independence is not new, this whole idea of pushing for a referendum is on a political level. So the referendum itself as people have said in the news, it's unconstitutional because there was no support from government level. So you can't just self-declare as an autonomous region that you want to have a referendum. So that's recognized here, too, that they pushed for a referendum that isn't endorsed on a greater state level. But it was a very precarious process, extremely precarious process, because it wasn't supported by the state. So you don't necessarily have the same mechanisms that you would have for any other election. It's, of course, also not necessarily representative because not everybody who was registered to vote did vote. There's no way of really verifying all the numbers because, you know, some ballots were confiscated, some people couldn't vote. So, but I think it was a way for the Catalan independence movement, for the politicians who moved it, to say, look, we're going to call for this referendum. And either way, like, if people come out and vote and that there's a majority that votes for yes, that's an indication. If Spain shuts it down and won't let us have a referendum, that's an indication for us to say the government is unwilling to negotiate with us. So I think either way, symbolically for the Catalans, it worked out to prove the inability for political dialogue, which I think is now what's coming up. So I think for a lot of people who are quite optimistic about this referendum is that people see it as a movement for structural political change. And I think for everyday Catalans, the ones who were out in the street, and on the 3rd of October at the general strike, there was hundreds of thousands of people in the streets. I think the everyday people really want structural change, and they're fed up with the current government, and they're fed up that there hasn't been any change, there hasn't been any willingness to negotiate with people. But that doesn't necessarily have to translate into independence, because there's also people within Spain who are utterly fed up with the government and the corruption, and they also want change. So I think what happens now on the outside is to kind of see just two notions. There's people on the left inside Spain who are in favor of unity, and there's people on the right in Spain who are obviously in favor of, like, a unified Spain. There's people in Catalonia who are very much for independence, have been pushing for independence for years, and there's people who just recently got on board with the idea, and there's people here on the left and on the right who are not in favor of independence. So there's a lot of layers.
You said that the push for independence is not new. Can you tell us a bit about the history of Catalonia?
I'm not an expert on Catalan history. So Spain is a nation state that's made up of different regions. And some of these regions have certain types of autonomy. And historically, Catalonia was a region, just like Castilla is a region, and Andalusia is a region, Basque Country is a region, culturally different. Catalonia has its own language, even though it's similar, you know, there's regional differences between people. So there's historically been this autonomy, this strive to have their own cultural and political identity. So that has existed before, like it has existed in other places. But I think what's really important in Spain to consider is not so much what happened here 200 years ago. I think it's important to consider the period of the Spanish Civil War and the Spanish, or the dictatorship under Franco, and then the transition. And the way Spain transitioned was, for during the time, probably for many people, the most suitable thing to do, which was basically, you know, we forget everything and we move forward. And nobody was put on trial. There was no process of reconciliation, because it was just trying to move forward as fast as possible and create a democracy out of a very strict fascist regime. But unlike other countries like Germany that had some sort of process that put people on trial, but then also had in the 60s a student movement that called for like dealing with the history, teaching the history in schools, having some sort of like reconciliation process, that never happened here. Right, so I think there's a lot of lingering like past injustices that have happened that haven't been processed. And then, of course, combined with an economic crisis that hit Spain really hard, and a political elite that hasn't necessarily always listened to people. And Podemos, which is a party that came out in the last few years, I think is one of the positive outcomes of people mobilization and people being fed up with the government. But there's still a very long way to go for that to change.
There are conflicting positions within Catalonia regarding the independence. Can you tell us a bit about that?
Yeah, I think what I can say is that I've come across a huge number of people who were in favor of the referendum. And even people who weren't pro-independence felt that people need to have a right to decide, which I think is really important to know. People wanted to have a democratic way of expressing their political, maybe like disillusion, or just their hopes. So I think that's really important. And I think that the failure that I see, why these contradicting opinions are now being kind of homogenized into one, is because there was no way of negotiating with the current government to come to a conclusion that maybe allowed them to give people the right to decide. So I think that's where the biggest problem is, and I think the denial of any sort of decision-making by the people kind of pushed people to maybe put their differences aside and come together as one, even though I don't think that, you know, we can speak of one Catalan movement. I think there's very different political streams in that. So we can't really compare like anti-capitalist left-wing movements that are pro-independence with some conservative Christian groups that are also pro-independence. And of course, and I think that's the other thing, that, you know, independence is not, I think this is something that is a little bit lost in the coverage of what's happening. Independence is not just something that you can unilaterally declare and it happens, because we live in a world that is held together by international laws that some countries, you know, recognize more than others, but independence is dependent on recognition by other nation states. So even if the current Catalan regional government was to unilaterally declare independence, and I'm skeptical because nothing has happened so far, that would require other countries to recognize an independent state. And if they don't recognize it, then you have, you know, then you have a state that can't exist because there's no international recognition for it. And then it can't economically really be functional because other countries won't recognize it as an independent state. So I think there are different political layers that are national, European, and international that people also need to consider that aren't necessarily always talked about. So I think there's some legal scholars on the center-right that have been writing in newspapers, in Spanish newspapers, who are opposed to the independence, but who actually really break it down in legal terms and say, okay, let's assume this was going to happen. What are the steps and what is necessary? And a lot of companies now, big companies and banks, have said, if Catalonia is to declare independence unilaterally, we're moving out of Catalonia, and that's a huge economic loss. So I think there is lots of different factors that need to be considered. But what is clear, I think, is people's disillusionment with the political elite. And now there's people coming out, rather right-wing people coming out, protesting for Spanish unity, but there's also demonstrations, few, but there have been demonstrations that have been of people to come out in support of political dialogue. And people outside Catalonia have said, okay, we urge our government to choose a political path and have negotiations. But the government so far is putting conditions on dialogue. They're saying, oh, we're just going to talk to you if you say that you are not going to declare independence. So that there's a precondition for actually even coming to the table. And I think what's most important now is that people come together politically to actually have a conversation of what's going to happen, because otherwise the ones who lose are the people on the ground. It's not going to be the political elite. I think now amongst people there's a push for independence, because, I mean, people think that this is the only way to create something new from scratch that's going to be completely different from what they know. I think there is that sentiment for a lot of people. I think for me the most heart-moving and impressive, I think, images of the 1st of October were people who were, you know, older, who had lived the dictatorship and who were just so incredibly excited about the symbolic vote, you know, like, it was, to me, it was really, really moving. I mean, of course, there's a lot of young people as well, but there were people who came out, and this is like, it was a symbolic gesture, because obviously this is not a fully, like, formalized process, it's very precarious. So yeah, and then of course there's a lot of young people that support it.
Do you think
the police brutality was shocked a lot of people. I think shocked the middle class, shocked very privileged people, because they're not used to seeing people getting their, like, I don't know, like getting kicked in the head and having the hair pulled. So I think it also shows, I think, to a certain level, how privileged a lot of people are, because they were so shocked because they had never seen images like that before, or they had seen it and didn't care because it didn't affect them.
I was just going to ask about that. So is that violence in terms of the way that the Spanish government responded, is that sort of symbolically representative of the kind of corruption that you're talking about?
Well, I think the police, if you ask me, I think police brutality is a huge problem in Europe. Is a huge problem, and it's becoming a bigger and bigger problem because people can use excessive force with impunity often. So even if they're brought to court, oftentimes these cases go unsentenced or people are, you know, declared innocent. So I think, to me, as somebody who's, you know, works in organizes around social justice issues, I can say police brutality is a problem. Has been a problem in places like Barcelona for a long time, in particular of the local Catalan police against migrant population, mainly undocumented people. But I think what was so shocking about that was that it was clearly a very non-violent process. So people were, I mean, I'm sure there was some places where people, you know, threw something at cops, but mainly what you could see in the video footage was people peacefully gathering, trying to cast a vote in what was declared an illegal referendum, but there was no use of force. So I think that's where people felt that there was excessive force.
Is there anything else you want to say around that?
I think the only thing I see is, yeah, it's quite complex. There's not two opposing sides. I think there's people on the left and on the right, on either side of Spanish unity and Catalan independence. And again, I think maybe just mentioning that how a lot of people have hopes in this movement of self-determination, especially people who are social justice activists. And I see that, I feel that, I think it's a really hopeful moment, but I also feel like we shouldn't flatten out and compare Catalonia to other places that are, like, they're oppressed by colonial regimes. So I feel like that has been something that bugs me. So I feel like I'm constantly defending what's happening in Catalonia to people who don't want to see why people might want the right to self-determination. But then internally, I often feel myself explaining to people here who fight for independence that they can't compare their own situation to that of places that are, you know, currently violently oppressed or under military regime, because it's not quite the same.
What will happen now? There's people protesting now against independence, right?
There has been a few far-right demonstrations that occurred, but there are also demonstrations, as I said, in favor of political dialogue. But yeah, the scary thing is that ultra-right groups are coming out into the street. And now, of course, these ultra-right groups are not necessarily always affiliated to the political party that is currently in government, but some people, of course, that are in the ultra-right might support some of these political parties. And that's really scary because these are groups that, you know, align themselves with some ideas that are really not necessarily the most inclusive and that can potentially cause some violence, I think. So that's what's actually most disturbing, where I always feel like this process has made some of the fascists come out of the woodworks. You know, so I think it's also really flattening to call everybody who's on the right a fascist. As somebody who, you know, is a political scientist, I feel like, look, some people can be right and be, and we can oppose their ideas of right-wing politics, but there's some real fascists out here. And even if they're not very many, it's still too many, and we should be alarmed. I think we should be alarmed with what ease they're now coming forward, because now they feel like they can speak up to a cause that a lot of people will listen to. But of course, they come from a very different angle that maybe somebody who's, you know, a middle-class Spanish person who just believes that the country should stay together because it's better for everybody, but that doesn't necessarily have the same opinions as somebody who actually thinks, you know, Franco wasn't a dictator. That's where the nuance gets lost. I think that's when these blocks go up and people are opposing each other as like, this is us and this is you and there's nothing that holds us together. That's where I see the danger.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.